In our culture, we learn through stories. But what if the stories we hear don't match the reality of life? What if the stories we hear every day that tell us how to write the narrative of our lives actually lead us to a false narrative? My name is Tim Kroll, and on this podcast, you will hear real stories. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Real people sharing the hard times, the bends in the roads along life's journey. If you're ready to join a community of other real people who are writing the narrative of their lives, then go to narrative.live and join the community. Now let's dive into today's show. Back again, we have another story, another incredible journey, another narrative that we're going to be able to explore, look at, find out where are the false narratives, what's going on as far as being able to craft the true narrative, the legacy that Susan's going to leave behind. But just real in brief, Susan and I met several years ago through Play Don't Pause group that Alan, and I found that was such a great way to be able to meet people. But I love this aspect because now we get to find out a little bit more behind the scenes, a little bit more of the history. So Susan, thank you for being here.
Well, I'm so glad to be here, Tim. It's great to see you.
Yeah. So let's start with the beginning, though, where we always start. 30 seconds. We meet in an elevator. Who are you? Who's Susan? Who is Susan?
Oh my gosh. 30 seconds. So I live close to the coast. I walk on the beach no matter what the weather with my dog. And in the springtime, I am taking care of my gardens, my bees, my chickens, and my grandbabies.
Oh, that's wow. Living on the coast, you didn't really say where. So it could be Alaskan coast where it's super cold, or it could be Florida coast. I don't know where we have.
No, we're on the coast. We're on the southeastern coast of Massachusetts, right on the Rhode Island border. So you never know. It could be Alaska or Florida.
Well, and then you got the polar bear plunges up there. I hear there's a lot of that kind of stuff. You got a lot of those things going. So this is exciting. And I love hearing about that. And I love the whole aspect of being able to be outside, because that's part of my passion. But let's dive into the beginning of, as you were growing up, what were the beliefs or the perspectives? What was it like that you thought you were going to be? Or what were the things that were happening at that time? And I say this every time. Sometimes it is something that was spoken directly to you. Somebody told you you had to act that way or be that way. Sometimes it was an example, and sometimes it was a traumatic event. It's different for everybody. But what shaped that perspective of who you were going to become?
So interesting, because I knew that we were going to be talking about this, and I thought, gosh, there's so many pieces of me. Which one am I going to pull out this time? And I think where I'm going to go with it is how I always thought I had to be the one who knew the things. I thought I had to be the smartest in class. I had to get 100s. I had to be innovative. I had to be a little bit more. That was one part. And at the same time, growing up in the 60s, early 70s, it was also, yes, but you're a young woman, and so you can't shine too bright, right? You can't always raise your hand in class because somebody's going to make fun of you. So it was that, like, my internal wanting to be the best, wanting to be the smartest, wanting to get the 100 and the extra credit. And on the other hand, not wanting to shine much.
What started those thoughts? Was that society? Was it pressure from friends? Was it, where did that come from? Because we're all taught, and I think that there's a core there, like you said, I want to be the best and I want to shine, but yet you had that outside pressure. So there's kind of an interesting dynamic going on there.
You know, it was probably my father. And now that I'm thinking about it, I probably have passed that same baloney on to my own kids. Because I always say to them, I used to always say to them growing up, well, anybody can be ordinary, right? Or anyone can be mediocre. You're special, right? And I probably put that same kind of pressure on them that I put on myself.
Let's dive into that. Yeah. So when we look at that pressure, it's interesting, because when we look at our society, the success aspect of it is, yes, you need to be the best. And like you just mentioned, the ordinary. So there's an element of truth in there. Where is the false part of it, and what did that, or what kind of impact did that have on you?
Well, you can't always be the best. And you know what? It's okay if you're not. It's okay. My third daughter, Zoe, reminds me of this all the time. You don't have to, Mom. Like, it's okay to sit and relax sometimes. You don't always have to be productive. You don't always have to be doing the things. And so now, as I'm where I am now, I do still have to kind of work at that a little bit, that it's okay to be okay, and it's okay to not always be doing. I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, kind of. It does. I mean, because it's definitely something that we strive for. What were the circumstances or the scenarios where this showed up in your life? And then how did it really impact your perspective on, it sounds like a little bit of perfectionism. That was part of it. But then you have that other aspect of, well, I can't be perfect and I can't show up and I can't be shine too bright because it's just not appropriate.
Yeah. So there's those places, right? So of course, in college, I had to be the best. In my first job, I had to try to do all of the things and working 70 hours a week in corporate. I was a quality control manager for a dairy. Dairies are 24/7, so you could really work 24/7 if you wanted to. And I was young and I wanted to impress, and I did all of the things, even if they weren't in a job description. And then that meant burnout, right? And so that's a thing. And fast forwarding now, I'm trying to think of what the second part of the question is. How did I come to terms with that? I think becoming a parent. I have 4 children of my own and a couple of others that kind of went through my home that I call my extensions. And knowing that sometimes being there, in their case, just being there for them was enough. Mm. And to not push them to get out. Actually, I'm thinking about this one talk that I heard. Somebody came, Pastor Johnny came to speak at the school about teenagers 101. And it was like an epiphany for me because he kept saying that you got to set your boundaries. You got to make sure your kids know where the boundaries are. They know where they are and how to come back in. But it's really the unconditional acceptance and love that they receive from you that's going to bring them happiness. It's not going to be being productive. And that, this was a big one too, that in this part of my life where I'm talking about raising my kids, which was, you know, who knows what they're doing, right? I know there's books out there now, like, just do what you do. And I was a pusher. What are you doing sleeping? I'm an early riser. Like, what are you doing? And he said, look, teenagers need the same thing that babies need in the first year of their life. Babies need food to know that they're loved and accepted, and they need good rest. And he said, that's what teenagers need too. And that was like, oh, okay. So unconditional love, of course, good food. I'm a Jewish mother. Of course, I'm going to give them good food and lots of rest. It's the rest part that I hope.
Okay. It's interesting the concepts and the ways that we are ability. I mean, we're always able to change. We're always able to adapt. And some of that is the realization of being able to adapt out of that. But there, again, kind of coming back to this one point of you said earlier is that, but you're a woman and you're not allowed to shine too bright. How did that impact some of the things that you did? Was it a, like, I'm going to show them anyway kind of a thing? Or was it a, I'm going to back off a kind of a, like, how did that impact your presence and the way that you were going to show up to the world?
That's a good question, and I'm not really sure how to answer it. I think that probably what I would say is how I handle it. Now, I think it's always served me to not be loud and bombastic about things. But if there's a discussion happening and I have a point to make, everybody makes their point, and then I can chime in with something that's well thought out and is more likely to bring people into some kind of concurrence, is to find the commonality of what we're talking about and then to present an idea that in a way that everybody's feels heard.
So let's transition into what was the biggest idea or shift or the situation or scenario that allowed you, what you just said there, is that as you get older and the way that you handle it is you kind of show up as I need to think this through first and then come with a very educated answer. But you're still going to shine. You're still going to allow your voice to be heard, your opinion to be heard. And then the other aspect is, again, it's almost like, okay, I need to be thoughtful, but yet not perfectionistic. And it sounds like that was a battle that you transitioned through, you thought through, maybe had to adapt a little bit and see how people responded. So tell me about that. Was there a circumstance that really woke you up and said, hey, I need to do it now?
I need to switch from perfectionism. Is that what you're saying?
We call it the bend in the road.
Yeah.
The trauma, experience, situation. What made you decide it is okay to shine? What made you decide that it's okay not to be a perfectionist, that it's okay to be just okay?
It's probably from having so many kids in my house. I mean, something's got to get let go, and everybody was fine with it. And then taking on responsibilities in my community before I started my business. So after I worked for a dairy, and then I started my family after trying for a really long time, had a fairly large family, and then started getting involved with community work before I have the job that I do now. And feeling very introverted up until that point, but there's something about raising four, five, six human beings and being responsible for them that makes you feel like, okay, I've got this, I'm responsible for these kids, and I'm going to show up for my community and for them. So taking on different responsibilities, but also always protecting. Like I never, I don't want to go into that, but I never really got into the chit-chatty part of it as much as the what can I do, right? So I always took on kind of the more high-tech committees, the more education-based ones versus the more what you might think of with the PTA, with baking bread or decorating or something like that. It was always kind of enrichment-based.
So was there something during that time when you started taking on the responsibilities where you felt that burnout? Because you mentioned earlier about that burnout kind of a scenario. Can you share a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, I mean, any parent has felt burnout, especially if you're trying to do all of the things. So with all the community things that I did, of course, I was up too late, sending out emails, organizing things, doing arts and crafts. I was volunteering at the Children's Museum and coming up with an agenda for that. But that ended up being such great training for where I ended up in my professional life right now, which was learning all of the different aspects of communication and how to be communicative in a larger scale way so that committees ran well or the communities knew what was going on.
Huh. I guess because I've experienced this with some others, the burnout aspect, some people hit a block wall and they are just done and they have to disconnect. And was that the experience, or was it more of a, there was just a little warning signal that went off and it was like, okay, I need to change. I need to adjust.
Yeah, I think I just eased into it. So bunch of kids in the house. And what I kind of left out of there too, was when I left my job at the dairy and had a bunch of kids. And then just a few years later, my mom had a car accident in Florida, brain injury and a spinal cord injury. And I ended up bringing her, I guess I forgot that part to bring this in. I ended up having to med back her up to Massachusetts, get her into the Massachusetts hospitals. And so now I'm doing full care for my mom, plus all those kids in the house. So there isn't time to think about poor me. I worry about this. Oh, you just do the things you have to do and you make do. And I mean, I'm not going to discount the fact that I have an incredibly loving and supportive husband. And that is a huge key as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I find too, did that have an impact on your personality as well? A lot of times when there is a major individual that you have to take care of, it kind of changes your personality. It changes the way you act and the way you operate.
I feel strong. Now that I have had those kids and taken care of my mother in such a crisis, because then I took care of her while she was in my home for, I think, 5 years. And then I was her guardian for another 17 years after that. Then you feel like I can do anything, right? If I can raise these 5 kids and they're all doing amazing and they're all in good relationships, and if I can care for my mother and advocate for her, then really everything else falls away.
And it's amazing how those priorities and things change. Did you grow up thinking that that was where you were going to be? Or was that just something that kind of happened and you took on that role with all the gusto that you've got?
I don't remember what I thought of as a kid, what I was going to be. Probably, some kind of a scientist. And I was a, food scientist working at the dairy. And then I was able to take a lot of the skills that I learned there, not only the computer skills, but the setting up of standard operating procedures was a big part of my work there. And that's how I'm able to help the people that I work with now, is by knowing, meeting them where they are, right? So I think that's an important part, is seeing everybody. I was listening to your interview with Dave Englund today. And it was so interesting that towards the end he said he sees everybody with like a sign over his head, over their head, like they're struggling. Like everybody has a struggle. Mm-hmm. And it can be a big struggle and it can be little struggles. And I think that when you see somebody, you meet somebody, you want to engage with them, whether it's professionally or to start a relationship or as a colleague, I think that's important, is to know where they are and to not discount, all right, they're just not there yet. And I work in the tech, right? I work with digital marketing. So people come to me, they are like, oh, I have no idea. I don't know what to do. I'm like, well, that's because that's not your zone of genius. That's my zone of genius. Yours is your area. And let's make sure that shines.
Mm. Yeah. And I can see so often in some of the conversations and some of the stories that you're telling me, I can see so often that your zone of genius, that SOP and the ability to figure things out, man, that's just absolutely incredible. So what are the things, because it sounds like you have been relieved of responsibilities because the kids are now grown and there's things that you've been relieved of. So you've gained back some of your time. That transition, did you feel a sense of loss in there, or was that just a normal sense of this is just a change of seasons?
It was just a change of seasons. It was fantastic. They all moved out. Last one moved out. A year later, we moved to this house near the coast, and it's just getting better and better. And because I work for myself, I have my own business, I'm in charge of my own time. And I work as much as I want to. I try to work smarter, not harder. I control my calendar so that I can enjoy the outside and the babies.
Yeah, that's so incredible. So let's step into what is it that you're doing now to craft that narrative? What is the legacy that you want to leave behind? And that includes both the outreach that you see from a social standpoint and how you interact with the community, as well as the internal of what you just said, like protecting my time and spending that time. What are the habits and the routines that you go through?
Yeah, I'm so strict with my calendar. This has been probably one of the biggest gifts that I've given to myself, is that every Friday morning, I meet with a bunch of other entrepreneurs. Every Friday we meet and we take turns leading kind of a CEO power hour. And we just take stock. What we look at our calendar for next week or for the next month. We also do quarterly, 12-week year. So weekly, we look at our calendar. We look at all the sticky notes that we've got hanging around. We organize them. We try to put them into the calendar if we can. We make sure that we're following up on networking. We make sure that we're following up on invoicing and taking a look at our revenue, which is so important. And then as far as my calendar, I am strict about what slots I open up to be able to talk with clients or with collaborators, so that I'm always holding Fridays as my business planning time. Mondays is one of my grandbabies' days. Wednesdays is my implementation day for my clients. So if I stick to that, and then once a month I do a webinar, so I have to figure out all of the marketing for all of that. So I'm just really strict with my calendar. I would say that is part of it. There was more to the question you just asked, though, other than
all of that stuff. I mean, that's one element. And then I knew that was going to come out based on the conversation that we were having. And to say that you are very, because time is the one thing we don't get back. Nobody has any more of it. You can't get you have to be very, very proactive in managing that time. So that's just makes sense that way. What are the other things that you do? Some of the other routines? It sounds like, I think you mentioned you take the walk on the beach every day with a dog. That's a physical routine that you, I'm sure, maintain. What are some other things that you're doing to make sure that you stay healthy and that you stay active and involved?
Yeah. So as far as healthy, yes, walking. And I just love winter walking. I never was a winter person. But now, you know, you have a dog and he wants to go out all the time, and I live 5 minutes from the beach. It's just like, layer up, go outside and breathe it in and really take those moments. Gratitude is a huge part of my life. Every moment, every micro moment is gratitude. And I would have to say that's probably number one for me, is being grateful for being able to walk. You know, when my mom had her accident, brain injury and spinal cord injury, and I was just like, huh. You know what? Going up and down these three flights of stairs to do laundry could be a bummer, but it could be a blessing. And if you can look at everything like that, so I walk every day, well, almost every day. I do, I'm pretty dedicated yogi, have been for 23 years. And that is the physical and the mental part of that, which grounds me and keeps me in all of the good places. I am pretty conscious. I do habit stacking with my food. And so my number one healthy thing to do is put all the good stuff in my morning oatmeal so that I'm getting as much nutrients as that, because I don't like to swallow pills. And so all the stuff with the oatmeal. So my oatmeal is a big part of my health routine. And laughing a lot and being with my family as much as possible.
So what do you do as far as society and reaching out to the community? It sounds like you're still very, very involved in that too. So what are the things that you find are really important to you?
As far as community, so here, a lot different, right? When your kids aren't in school and I'm in a new town, I am on the board of directors for the Bristol County Beekeepers Association. And that was yay, because I wanted to be able to help them with their email marketing and with their website and Facebook stuff. That's kind of my zone of genius. And to meet these, right, beekeepers are really amazing people, because you have to be kind of like, calm is my, if you ask me what my superpower is, but you didn't, but I would tell you, it is calm. Calm and patience. And my goodness, beekeepers are calm and patience. Found new people there.
Why do you say that's your superpower, the calm and the patience? Why would you say, how does that come out in your life?
Well, I'll tell you how it used to, and then I'll tell you how it does. So five kids or more in my house all of the time, right? And of course, there's going to be a lot of fighting. And so you could rise to that at energy level, right? And my mom used to. Or you can kind of exude this, like, and so I would, like, my voice would go down. I would assess, my voice would go down, the eyebrow would go up, and then quiet, because they knew, oh, wait, something, right? So just shifting that energy a little bit was so powerful. The way it shows up now with the work that I do, so I work with service-based entrepreneurs. In particular, I work with a lot of energy-based people, Reiki, mediums, spirit mediums, people in the service industries, as far as solo professions. And there's a lot of anxiety around digital marketing. There's a lot of, like, either they hate it, it makes them want to vomit, they don't want to do it, but on the other hand, they want to grow their business. And when I start to go into these, do email and you're going to do this and SEO and analytics, and they're like, and people have come in tears. And if I can, again, exude this calm and this patience and hold their hands and say, all right, we're going to get through this together, and you're not going to have to worry because we're right here together, I think that carries through.
Yeah, absolutely. You're taking the stress out of something that seems to be almost unattainable. It's like, I don't understand it, so I don't get it. But no, that's incredible. So we're starting to wind down a little bit, but is there anything that you feel that you have learned through your life that you really want to share with somebody else? Is there something that is like, man, this was probably the best lesson that I walked away from? And what was the circumstances in learning that lesson?
Yeah, in 2008, when the economy was bad, and I thought, well, I had a little business, again, a lot of kids in the house taking care of my mother, but I was like, well, maybe I'll go back into corporate. And the advice that I got was, in writing my resume or putting out my things, was, Susan, you sound too, I forget the word he used, but you can already tell from talking to me what it was, right? It was just nobody talks about energy. Nobody talks about feelings. Like, you can't do all of that. And when I started the whole interviewing idea, and that was like in my head that Michael had told me that, I couldn't do it. And so when I couldn't do it and feel aligned. And so when I switched and trusted myself to show up authentically, much like I am here today, to just show up as I am and know that I have all of that knowledge behind me, and know that I can bring it up and present it when I need to, I think that has been, like, to be really comfortable sitting with yourself is so important. And again, so when I pass that on, so when I work with my clients and they're feeling kind of anxiety about the marketing or website or email or any of these things, when I say to them, look, at all you have to do is answer questions honestly, and you just have to show up in your zone of genius, and you have to know, be really comfortable that you know the answers that people are going to be asking. And when you do that, when you show up with generosity and consistency, your people will be attracted to you. And the people who don't align with you are not going to be attracted to you, and that's okay.
Yeah. And this is probably the million-dollar question. If you were telling your kids and speaking to your kids specifically about what you just said, how would you phrase that? How would you put that into terms of saying, hey, this is okay?
It's going to be that what other people think of you is not your business. So this is Don Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements. Have you read that book, Tim?
Yeah, I have, yes.
Oh my gosh, it changed my life. And whenever anyone asks me, well, what would you tell your younger self? I would say that, to read The Four Agreements. If you are doing what you feel is your very best all of the time, and you're living your truth, other people's opinions of you don't matter.
Isn't that incredible? Great, great, great advice. It's too often we think about it. And that's part of the false narrative that often people live, is they're trying to live up or live out what other people think they should be doing. And it's, yeah, oh, wow. Great, great stuff. You mentioned this briefly, and I do want to bring that up. You mentioned that you work with digital marketing, you do with email campaigns, you work with service-based companies. Can you just give me like a 30-second, a minute or so, just about what you do as far as an organization and the company? Because it's interesting. I love the approach of the calmness and the, you relieve all that anxiety that would normally come with that. So what do you do exactly as far as the business?
So right now, what I'm finding people need more, then like that, maybe they have websites, that's okay. I can hook them up with people who do websites if they don't already. Graphic designers, I know you've had a number of people on your show about that. There are many people. I'm pretty much planting my flag in email marketing, and that is because, again, you already had a taste of my control issues. Out there in social media world, it's just too chaotic, and I feel like it's just people shouting all of the time. And then you get all the things, you get imposter syndrome, you get the fear of missing out, all the things. So the reason I stay in email is because I can control the messaging. I can control who's on my list. And so the reason that I'd be out on social media would be to get people into my list. Now, one of the things I don't spend a lot of time on is sales funnels. But what I do spend a lot of time on is how can we, as service-based professionals, show up with more generosity and consistency and give more and give more and give more. So what I really do is I help people figure out what their opt-in is, create their landing page for them, and then make some kind of an automated email sequence so that they're bringing people in with, again, generosity. Just give, give, give. So that they don't have that ick feeling or indigent record.
Yeah, it sounds like the perfect marriage between SOP, your all the operating procedures, and building relationship, which is the two things that obviously have come out through this conversation, and that just is a perfect marriage between those two components.
Well, you're good at what you do, Mr. Kroll.
But it's amazing when you see how people, when they're confident, just as you are, and you step forward with, like you just said, all of that knowledge that comes in, it gives you that self-confidence, and you've really worked through some of the challenges. It's just amazing how people can show up in others' lives and just fix and change things. So, you know, kudos to you for doing that. How can people get in contact with you? What's the best way to be able to get with you, whether it's a website or email? How can people find you?
Yeah, pretty easy to find. Susan Finn. Well, the name of my company is Rise Above Noise. So if you look up Susan Finn, I'm not the surgeon Susan Finn. Digital marketing Susan Finn. Rise Above Noise. And then, of course, on my website, there's a riseabovenoise.com/goodies. You can get all kinds of free resources and learn more about how I show up and how I help the people that I help to show up, right? So one of the things that you mentioned today, I'll say real quickly, that we're talking about time and energy. One of the first things I always say in my monthly webinars, so you can come join a monthly webinar is that the only resources we really have are time and energy. We can make money, But as you said, we can't make more time and more energy. Yeah. So we just want to make sure that we're using both of those resources very intelligently.
Yeah, so good. So good. So again, thank you for sharing. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for telling us part of your journey. I know when we were in the green room previously, you said there's a lot of other things and we were just going to be like, okay, let's see where this goes. And I'm thankful for what we've talked about because I think it really will leave an impact. All right. Last thing. Is there anything that you felt like, hey, I just need to revisit this because this was the one thing that I want somebody to walk away with?
I think we covered it. I don't want to be repetitive. I think that's it. I think it's the main thing that I'd love to hammer home is to just show up in your own authenticity. Nobody else's opinion with you matters.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thanks again. For those listening, if you're listening to the podcast, make sure you go take a look at the video because the hand gestures that we both share, because we're very we're very expressive in the way that we talk. So you miss some if you're not watching the videos. But again, share, love to be able to share if something has resonated with you and whether you reach out directly to Susan, you reach out to me. That's the reason why we do what we do is because we love being able to hear the impact that we're having on others. So until next time, keep writing and crafting your narrative because your narrative is really truly what matters, as is everybody's story makes a difference. Until next time, we'll see you guys. Thanks for listening to today's show. But before you go, let me ask you a question. How would you like to be the author of your story? Take the next step now at www.narrative.live. Enter your details to connect with a community of others just like you that are tired of living under the false narrative. Finding your true story and writing your narrative, it will give you clarity, freedom of your day, and it just might change your life forever.